previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
I'm not wearing any pants.
So I watch a lot of these eating competitions because I got these braces and I can't eat so well now. So it's that vicarious thing.
He's not coming back. I wouldn't come back with him. He does so many more successful shows.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Eric Sandine.
I'm just happy that you were proven wrong once again, Eric, because Ayaz has to answer for his crime.
Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean?
You chose Kindergarten Cop 2, and you must answer for that crime.
I have to answer for anything. So today's episode, as I've tweeted earlier today on twitter.com/Ayaz, that we are going to review Kindergarten Cop 2. And this isn't some just regular movie review show. What do we do, Jonathan, to ourselves because we hate each other?
Yeah, ever since like episode 44 or something like that, we just decided that we would start watching really shitty movies just to see how our tolerance was for paying our full attention to stuff that really doesn't deserve it. This was just brought up from a conversation we had where we realized that if we're watching stuff at home, we often have a second screen open and our full attention's not really being dedicated to whatever it is that's on the television. Sometimes, at least in my case, to the point where I have trouble recalling specific things happening in movies because I wasn't really paying attention. So this was a challenge for ourselves to see how much of our full attention we could dedicate to something pretty shitty and no second screens are allowed. No talking with anyone else is allowed. No alcohol is allowed. It's just you and the movie. Then once you get to a point where you think, yeah, I'm done with this, you can write down how long you lasted into that film. And at that point, you can either watch the rest of the movie with as many distractions present as you like, or if you really want to, you can just walk away. And honestly, I almost did that for this movie.
How is it we've never named this challenge? Not like the single screen challenge, the shitty movie single screen challenge. It has no like quirky acronym. We need a backronym, so we need to come up with a word that we can fit something into. So that'll be the challenge for next week.
It's only been 100 episodes.
Why don't we have a catchy little acronym for this yet, or some kind of quick way of to describe? I mean, we do this thing. We could play it on a soundboard at this point. Jonathan has it memorized. So
yeah, there's very little variation when I describe what we do.
Yes,
it's pretty much.
And we take turns picking movies this week, or this episode's turn was mine. I chose Kindergarten Cop 2, starring Dolph Lundgren as the lead, and
the poor man's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I don't know if he was quite good. He also was the executive producer, so I don't know if he was a poor man at the end of this. So
quite good.
Well,
how long
he made that much money?
How long?
quite good. I'm having trouble processing this.
All right, let's ask Eric first. How long did you watch Kindergarten Cop 2 before you went to a second screen, alcohol, a combination of both, or neither?
Yeah. A commute movie for me. I watched it on BART and then on the bus and then back at home. I actually didn't get any notifications during that time, so I'm going to say I got home and cracked open a beer and it was about 45 minutes.
Jonathan?
To be fair, though, if you're riding on a fucking bus, there are distractions aplenty. But
you know what though? To be honest, I actually think I pay more attention when I'm on a bus and staring at my phone and have headphones in than I do if I'm like sitting in my house.
All right, that's fair. You're just trying to shut out the rest of the world. I got 15 minutes in to this turd, and then I stopped.
I got 51 minutes and 45 seconds in, and the reason why I stopped was because I was going to order dinner. So there you go.
Yeah.
God, I don't know. Maybe I'm just having a really awful week, and that's why this movie, like, I felt it was really bad.
I don't remember anything horrible at 15 minutes.
No, I was just so. I think I found this movie to open up an existential crisis in my life where I thought, I'm spending time watching this that I'll never get back.
You know, I was thinking the same thing.
Also, the great thing about the commute movie, like watching it on your commute, because like I'm wasting that time anyway. I could have been reading a news article or something, but really, you know,
that's fair. That's fair. Like in my case, I was watching it at home, and I thought I could be doing anything else. I could be playing with my dog.
More distracting at home.
Yeah. So, but Ayaz, you thought the same thing. While you're watching this movie, you thought,
yeah. So there's a point where it's like 40 minutes into the movie, and I have a note about this, and we haven't gotten proper names to many of the characters. And I'm like, I could be doing any number of things. And the phrase I thought that you just said is like, this is time I will never get back. Maybe that's what the challenge is called. Time you never get back.
That's fair. That should be the name of the – really, that should just be the name of the podcast at this point.
TimeYouNeverGetBack.com. The future home of best podcast of 2014 and podcastwithoutpretense.com coming to a URL near you. Yeah, but you're never getting this time back. And you've watched this thing. Although that's the thing. With the second screen, I think that it's not as bad because you just have it on as noise. And that's not such a big deal because you're doing something else. It's that first 51 minutes I spent of going,
This movie isn't anywhere close to being as bad as some of the stuff we've watched, as most of the stuff we've watched for this show. It's just really mediocre. And I think those are the movies that hit me the hardest, actually. The ones that they're not so bad that you can really tear into them, but they're not entertaining enough to kind of stand on their own. This one, to me, fell into that category. Like, there was nothing grossly offensively bad as opposed, except for the fact that none of the movie makes sense. No. Like none of it makes any sense. But
it reminded me of one of my favorite 30 Rock quotes where Liz is like getting quotes for her books. And the quote she gets from Jack is, "Of my employees, she numbers among them." She's super excited for that. And that's like what I thought about with this movie. I was like, of the movies we've watched, this numbers among them.
Yeah, this certainly is a movie.
Right. Right.
Yeah, it makes me think of the IT crowd with when they go see the musical Gay, and one of the buzz quotes on the poster for Gay the musical is, "Not as long as some other musicals." So one thing I wanted to mention, and I might even have this, I only wrote like a paragraph worth of notes, which tells you that I just didn't care at all about this movie. Although I've got some things to say about it. One of the things that really struck me is that the original Kindergarten Cop movie came out in 1990. Kindergarten Cop 2 came out this year, 2016, but the humor in it totally belongs to that early to mid 90s range.
Yeah, I guess so.
Some of it.
Like, the humor is just in that you're watching and you're thinking, like, yeah, this is what passed for comedy in the early 90s. This, you know, it's hitting all the beats, the comedic beats of a 90s comedy movie. And none of it just worked for me because it felt so, like, not the jokes themselves, but the style of the jokes, the way they were set up and paid off. It felt like this movie could have been made in 92 or 93.
I think people still make those movies. We just don't watch those movies. Like there are still comedies that come out that we're not watching and they're all that humor.
This is a movie that maybe if I had seen at the same age I was when I saw the first Kindergarten Cop, I probably would have thought was okay. At my age, I'm like this. I mean, it's just not worth the time it takes to watch it. But I do have a paragraph of notes if you want to hear them.
Go for it. Because I got none. And I just finished watching it like a minute ago.
I have copious notes. So I'll be talking after.
Sweet. Yeah, this is short. It says, Dolph Lundgren is an FBI agent. The movie opens up on his character doing an undercover operation to take down a crime boss. Boss's hot thang is upset that Lundgren lied. He's in the hotel room with the crime boss's hot thang. She's going to take the stand against the crime boss, but the boss arranges for the FBI's database of protected witnesses to be stolen. So they've put the boss's wife in protective custody at the beginning of the movie. Then the database containing all of the FBI's protected witnesses gets stolen from the FBI. We don't see this happen. We just find out it happened. I mean, we see like an assault on the FBI headquarters, but that's about it. Anyway, this is a ridiculous idea that they only have this information stored in one place. Also, it's weird that they don't just go and assign people new identities. Like, somehow that's a problem. Like, oh no, everyone only gets one. One per customer. After that, you're shit out of luck. We can't do the exact same thing we've already done for these people and move them somewhere else, thus rendering the entire database null and void. Which I would think would be the wise thing to do. Anyway.
Well, and considering that the database is linked with their actual identity in the same database.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like this is study design or control design. It's
right.
I'm quite sure somebody's figured this out many times.
Like, name Nancy Shrew, real name, yeah. Crime boss's wife. Like, oh, well, all exactly. We had to do was control F and we found her.
Right,
yeah.
It's in the same document.
Yeah, that seems a little short-sighted. Anyway, turns out some kids at a school might know about the database or some shit. I don't fucking know. I'm done paying attention to this movie. I will say that the humor I've seen in the first 15 minutes makes it feel like the film came straight out of the early 90s, even though it was made very recently. That's not a good thing. Lundgren, for some reason, poses as a teacher. FBI gives him a fake resume. The school is some fake-ass, hippy-dippy place filled with rich people's kids. So, you know, totally relatable. Lundgren meets the other kindergarten teacher, who is an attractive woman and thus, I assume, will become his love interest. Bingo! Possibly causing complications with the crime boss's hot thing later on. No, we never see the crime boss's wife again in the rest of the movie, even though she's the important... That's who he's going after. There's never any moment in the movie where you see her put into danger, which would have made an incredible amount of sense to be like the denouement of the film. But no, she's just there at the beginning, and then you might as well forget about her. She's not really that important. It's the flash drive that's important that has the database on it. So let's see. So much humor is based on the super politically correct, touchy-feely nature of the school. By that, I mean it's not funny. These are jokes that have been outplayed and done way better in other areas. Like, Portlandia does this kind of shit well. In this movie, it's not done well. One of the kids is captioned consistently through the whole movie, including, at one point, his signature on a little drawing, which is, I guess, a running gag. Trip, yeah. The classroom is larger than my entire elementary school was when I was in school. Just the one kindergarten classroom. Instead of it's not a tumor, we get gluten causes Alzheimer's, so you'll probably die. And I can't do this. This movie isn't worth paying attention to. It's a non-entity. Those are all my notes.
Okay, good.
I like it.
Eric, you have no notes.
Summary.
So, as I do, I take copious notes because if a movie is not that interesting, I try to pay attention to it anyway, and hopefully I'll amuse myself in my own notes. So by the time I'm done with this, those of you who have not seen the movie, you will feel like you have seen the movie. I promise. So there is no need, and we tweeted at Dolph Lundgren, by the way. So if you're watching this, we're sorry that people won't watch Kindergarten Cop 2, but let us know on Twitter because we'll work on that. We'll talk to you later.
There are other films of Dolph's that we can pimp out just so they watch those.
Although he didn't produce them, right?
So he makes less money.
Well, yeah. We'll see what else he did later on. I'll check his IMDb later because he's a very smart guy and a good drummer and everything like that.
Oh, yeah, he's nice. I actually like Dolph Lundgren the actor and Dolph Lundgren mm-hmm. the scholar quite a bit. This movie, I just didn't like. But I'm sorry, Ayaz. Please go ahead with your notes.
Here we go. It starts now. Universal logo. A Comcast product. That's quality. We open at a motel.
Fuck you, Comcast!
Just at the start. We open at a motel. A blonde woman is unpacking and Dolph Lundgren appears. Dolph makes his move on Blondie. Her name is Katya. Alexander barges in and slaps Katya. Apparently, Katya betrayed Alexander. Alexander's attention turns to Dolph Lundgren. Zogu is A's last name because it's have initials. Dolph says the safe word, pineapple. Dolph then explains it's a code word for the raid order. Then the cops show up with Bill Bellamy. Shouldn't they have shown up before he explained what happened instead of right after? Like right after Lundgren says pineapple? Zogu then promises revenge. Katya slaps Dolph upon finding out he's with the FBI. Dolph then talks to Bill Bellamy. They are going for a drink. By the way, at this point, if I'm calling by their names, it means that we have not learned their actual character names yet. Time for the opening credits with fun music. Dolph is working out. Unlike the original Kindergarten Cop, the names in the credits don't have any backwards letters or anything. It's just like a childish font, but no little backwards R's. Not cute. Dolph Lundgren is an executive producer of this. Four people took credit for the screenplay. Ought to be good then, right? More people equals more better story, right? Right?
Only in Pixar.
Dolph's name is Reed. To the FBI office. Bill and Reed talk about Reed's love life. Reed did not get his Twix from the vending machine. Bill says it's karma. Reed pulls a gun on the vending machine until a higher-ranking person shows up. Interrogation. Sorry.
Here's where I have to interrupt. So,
go for it.
The cop pulling a gun on the candy machine is the first example of what I would call that 1990s style of humor. That's the kind of thing mm-hmm. you would see in a 1990s yeah. style comedy that feels out of place in 2016 to me. Also, the Twix thing becomes a running gag, which is throughout the rest of the movie, and it's not effective because it's not funny. Yeah, I'm spoiling your fucking movie of Kindergarten Cop 2. And the character that I is I suspect about to talk about, the captain of the FBI team, is a by the book stereotype of the angry law enforcement boss who's had it up to here with the shenanigans. And again, totally like stereotypical. There's nothing surprising about his character at all. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm going to spoil my own notes here, by the way. That higher up guy, that boss, he gets a name in the captions at one point. His name in the captions, Boss. I'm not kidding. Okay. I'm going to keep going on this. Interrogation room sequence, a Grey Poupon reference. It's made about 30 years after it would be relevant, because why was somebody following around in a car? A low-level guy is being asked about his connection to Zogu. He says he was going to sell to Zogu, but he sold to Popoff instead. He claims he was selling the witness protection database. The office goes on lockdown, lights out, alarms on, hostiles on the perimeter. Reed grabs the thief because he believes this lights out thing has to do with him. Reed uses the vending machine as a shield with Bill. Uses it as vending machine as a shield as Bill, the thief, and he all go down a hall. I expect Reed to get his Twix because when he's trying to get Twix on the vending machine, he got stuck.
Ooh, good call.
Wilhelm scream as people get hit by the vending machine. Reed gets his Twix. Calls it karma.
Now, I also want to point out that there were approximately 5,000 bullets fired at them all the way down this hallway.
This is and the vending machine. Vending machine.
The vending machine absorbed all of them until the very end, and then the glass shattered. So essentially, it looked like everyone was apparently aiming at the metal around the big glass panel and never hitting the glass panel that makes up the majority of the vending machine.
The metal on the outside of the vending machine probably isn't going to stop a bullet from a couple meters away.
But Twix will.
Just throwing that one out there. Yeah.
Or Charleston. Maybe they hit a Charleston Chew. You never know.
Charleston Chew. Those things
I think it would be a Snickers because they're satisfying.
That actually reminds me that I skipped a note here. It says, shootout at the FBI office. The hostiles are shooting a great deal and missing a lot. The good guys also miss a bit before hitting the hostiles. All right, so we got the Wilhelm scream as they get hit. Later that day, lights are on.
There's also, I'm sorry, one last thing. There's also a surprising lack of FBI agents at the FBI headquarters. Like, it's amazing how few people. It goes from, like, before the raid, the office is fucking full of people. Like, there's people, like, crossing with paper in hand. You know, that purpose. Like, I have this paper, so I have to go over there now. And then when the raid starts, there's like a small group of people in the downstairs area who are trying to hold off the folks coming in, who then get wiped out Star Wars New Hope style. And then just Dolph Lundgren and Bill Bellamy, and that's it. And no one else, like, everything. It's a ghost town. And I'm like, where'd all the people go?
Well, they obviously have to take the papers over somewhere else, as you mentioned. Yeah. Later that day, lights are on in the FBI office. Reed and Bill are talking to the higher-up. Confirmed, the witness protection database is compromised. Higher-up stops Reed before he leaves and yells in his face, "Get me that drive!" Okay.
Which was an awkward scene. It was really awkward.
Because at this point, by the way, there is no reason apart from the higher-up seeing Reed pull a gun on the vending machine that there's enough shit that he is sick of. That he's had enough of, that he has to get in his face. Because it's also, he just gave the assignment to Reed and Bill Bellamy. So you don't have to yell yet. It's a little early.
Yeah. Well, you know, they didn't have enough time in the movie to dedicate to the escalation that would eventually result in the boss losing his patience. So they just had to go straight to that moment.
Yeah. So try to think, if you guys have seen The Last Action Hero, think of that boss or in the police station. Who's obviously a parody. That's essentially who we have in this movie. And if you haven't seen that movie, The Last Action Hero, I think, is a better movie. Zoger's residence. He's talking with his lawyers. It is a better movie. He's talking with his lawyers as women swim in a pool. Back at the FBI, higher up is in the bathroom. He's at a urinal, gets a call from Reed and Bill. Jason is the name of the thief. Reed wants another chance at Jason. We go to a federal penitentiary.
Side note. Don't answer the phone when you're taking a piss at the urinal, guys. Just don't do it.
Yeah. Just don't do it. Because also, there's a comical moment, or at least what's appeared to be a comical moment, that he made a mistake on his clothes or whatever. So, federal penitentiary, Jason and Reed are in an interrogation room. Jason's brother, Kevin, had the drive, and it's hidden. Kevin is also dead. The kids know. That's what Zogu said. Okay? Reed and Bill, who still has no name, 17 minutes in, driving. Bill wants to question the children. Reed wants to question the children. Bill interrogates the children. So they have a scene with children in an interrogation room. I think this is supposed to be funny. We should also point out
that Kevin, the character Kevin, was a kindergarten teacher. Mm-hmm. And he taught at this super, super hoity-toity liberal school. Mm-hmm. And that it was his brother who was the con man guy, always looking to score, and that Kevin had died in a car accident. Apparently unrelated to anything else in this movie.
Yeah, they never cleared that up as if Zogu had anything to do with it or not. They just
Zogu apparently didn't know about Kevin because that's true. That otherwise there would be no point to half the movie because he would have already been after tearing that school apart.
So then arguably it would be Popoff, who Jason claims he sold it off to, which he might not have, whatever. So there might be another mob that would take out Kevin. That's never cleared up. This is like, you remember like when I tried to figure out how Christian Mingle is really the American Psycho of Christian dating movies? We're reading way too much into this. All right, so Bill interrogates the children.
Go ahead, Eric. Interrogation. This is part one of the FBI. They're doing things with kindergartners that they probably shouldn't be doing, or putting them directly in harm's way.
Also,
it does a total switcheroo, because in this sequence where we see Bill Bellamy's character interrogating the kids, he's clearly getting nowhere. He's not having any success with the kids at all. However, skip forward an hour and 20 minutes into this goddamn movie, and suddenly Bill Bellamy's the guy who's got all the fucking answers to dealing with the kids. Yes. Yeah, he's the kid whisperer. Exactly. So you get like a character who is completely incapable of working with the kids in any useful way at the beginning, and then at the end, he's the one who's guiding Lundgren's character to interact with the kids in constructive ways.
Well, perhaps... this is this creative storytelling such that Bill Bellamy did ask these kids lots of questions, but for our own amusement, they only kept in the scenes where they made no sense. And also, this is the same, what appears, I think, is the same FBI office that was raided by hostiles like yesterday. the children are in the interrogation room with Bellamy with no parents, as far as I can tell, and they are directly taking questions from an agent, which also, you know, happens.
We should point out there's also the very possibility that Bill Bellamy's character, because we're told how much time passes. It's like day one, day two, day three, once we get to the kindergarten cop part, which, by the way, we haven't even hit yet. We're 20 minutes into the movie and we haven't hit that yet.
Nope. We got a way to go.
But we're told, you know, day one, day two, day three, day four, day five. Maybe sometime between day one and day five, when all the shit goes down, that's when Bill Bellamy's character and his character's wife have their five kids, and then he becomes an expert on kids.
Well, it could be one of those biblical days, you know? Like a long,
like a 40-day and 40-night day?
Well, no, like on the second day, this thing was, and the seventh day, he rested. I don't know. That was supposed to take a long time. But that was the other movie, okay? I don't have the Christianity for Dummies book right now. We'll talk about that, well, last week or 2 weeks ago. All right.
We'll talk about it 2 weeks ago.
I like that. I'm going to start saying that.
That's good. Yeah.
One kid. Okay, so the kids are full of useless information. One kid. This is interrogation if you've lost where we are. One kid says the flash drive is in the emergency kit. And then they go check. The child is confused. The flash drive with a flashlight. Okay, not too bad. Reed pitches recon and he goes undercover without the school's permission. He says it's okay since he saw it in a movie once. Okay, that didn't happen. He should have, though. Like the kindergarten cop.
This part, by the way, makes no sense. The whole conceit of the movie depends. It depends on him becoming an undercover cop working as a kindergarten teacher, because that's the basis of the movie, right? The whole thing depends on it. The problem is it makes no sense. Because why bother doing the undercover thing? Why not just interrogate people, investigate the school, and do a full search for the drive at the school? Oh. The bad guy doesn't know about the school yet, so there's no need for the undercover part. It just needs to be the FBI contacts the principal and says, "Hi, Kevin, his brother ended up stealing some important stuff. We think he handed it over. We think that Kevin hid it in the school somewhere. So here's a warrant. We're going to search the school for this so that we can end up putting a very dangerous criminal behind bars." But no, instead we get this weird plot where an FBI agent is going to pose as a kindergarten teacher and then surreptitiously search for the evidence that they need. It makes no sense.
Thus putting all of the children in that school in danger. Like, in a lot of danger.
Okay. Guys, listen, what's really important here is if what Jonathan says actually happens in the movie, this movie's just called Cop 2, okay? And or agent, because he's not a cop, right? He's a federal agent. It's not the same thing. True. At least I don't think that name is applied to federal agents.
It should have been kindergarten fed.
Yeah, exactly. Really, well, except if it's kindergarten fed, it's a movie about lunch.
Which we'll get to lunch. I have that in the notes, too.
I think you could have written a movie where the undercover part would have become a necessity, but that was not achieved in this film. There was no reason for the undercover part at all. And except for the fact that the movie wouldn't exist without it. But that's a meta reason, right? There's not a logical reason in the movie itself for that to have happened. And so things like that were bugging me, where I was like, I know it's just a dumb comedy and I'm not supposed to think about this, but it's sloppy. Like, you could have written a screenplay where there was a legitimate reason for a character to have to take an undercover position there. Maybe finding out that, that one of the kids definitely knows, but you don't know which kid, and you have to take a more careful approach, but that wasn't established well in the movie. Anyway, I'm sorry, Ayaz. Please continue.
Let's keep going. So Reed applies for the job because he's going to be an undercover agent without the permission of the school. His resume is full of accolades and a letter of recommendation from the mayor. He claims he taught the mayor's daughter Krav Maga. He's being told we need a sensitive approach since the last teacher was killed. That'd be Kevin. Reed is eye-fucking the love interest. Miss Hallstrom, the other kindergarten teacher. There's this scene. He's just staring at her, and you're like, this is uncomfortable.
Yeah, she is, to be fair, smoking hot.
Yes, true. Reed gets the job since the movie wouldn't go forward without it. That's what my notes said, and I knew this was going to happen. Bill explains to Reed to wear an earpiece so Bill can get him if the children – or can help him if the children are too much. Reed says, I got it, as in he doesn't want Bill's help. School time. Here's hoping one of the kids recognizes Reed from Rocky IV or The Expendables. Never happens.
Nice.
Slow motion. See, the thing is, the notes start to – like, that's how I start entertaining myself at this point when I'm watching these shitty movies. Slow-mo shots of the children walking to class. In case we forgot, a graphic appears saying, day one. The principal is all new agey. Respecting everybody's respect Reed because he's a citizen of the earth, just like you. Very feely stuff. Reed, he says, today is technology day. We're going to learn about computers. He shows them a flash drive. These kids are clearly older than kindergarten age and apparently stupider than regular kids. I had a five-year-old, and that kid was able to focus on a particular thing. Okay, so that thing that the kid said about the guinea pigs is really important. It's some kind of mnemonic device. There's a poem about this guinea pig that seems to come out of nowhere, and these kids all recite it like fucking robots. I'm like, well, that's obviously important, because why would these kids who are unable to focus on anything start saying a poem?
Yeah, to be fair, there's like two or three other things that also pop up, because I had the same thought. I was like, well, that's going to be important later. And there are a couple of other things.
Things that make you take pause and have pause. And you're like, what happened there? I'm sure that's what Jonathan was going to say, because he did take a long Skype pause. I also want Jonathan back for my next note because it's in bold. Do we have Jonathan Strickland back? No. Okay, we'll just continue anyway until he connects.
You can go back to it. So, you can skip that note.
Nah, this is awesome. So we go to the mnemonic device thing. It's reading time. As Reed reads the story, he finds the story to be full of bullshit. He says, sharing is overrated. Quote, never apologize for abilities that make you better than other people. Agreed, Reed. I totally agree with you. What a bunch of bullshit that was. Recess. Reed finds flash drives in the copy room and a taser. Zach Reed is his full name. Hal Pascal is the tech teacher, and he's there talking to Reed. And he's trying to make a friend? I couldn't tell if he was hitting on him or not. Hal forces Reed to give him his phone number. It's lunchtime. A kid asks him to heat up her tofu. He can't do it in the plastic container because that would be cancerous, I guess. Let me guess. Reed has a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and a kid will freak out. ... PB&J, well, confirmed. Freak out, confirmed. Cowboy, which is one of the child's names, freaks out. Kids freak out. They all start running while screaming. Cowboy is highly allergic, it turns out, and then the tofu explodes the microwave door open. Ha 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 ha. Okay. Back to Zogu's place with... What was that, Eric?
I've microwaved things before, and I don't think tofu is one of those things that would just explode. But
even if it did explode, I don't believe its concussive force is so great that it would open the door of the
open
microwave.
Open the door, yeah, right. Like, yeah, I don't think that's happening.
Yeah, the thing inside once it explodes, I believe. Now my physics is really old, and Jonathan would be great for this one. If tofu explodes in the microwave, I would believe the kinetic energy is dispersed in the explosion. Jonathan is telling me he's rebooting the modem. We'll come back to that point. Whether or not the tofu that explodes.
I can search how stuff works right now and see if there's an article by Jonathan.
There better be an article about tofu explosions and microwaves. Anyway, he's coming back. We'll keep going because I'm sure he's not going to miss any of this. Back to Zogu's place with lounging women at the pool. Zogu wants to drive. He's also preparing fish. Back to school. It's nap time. Reed goes through the flash drives and opens all the files instead of looking at a file explorer. Did you notice this?
Right.
Anytime they would have a flash drive?
Yeah. This actually bugged me a lot because I'm imagining – because it was like auto run was on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm – like the FBI, I assume, have probably turned off auto run on their machines. But hey. They kept that database where everything was linked together. the FBI may be just horrible at data management. Just
and not only that, when,
stick
when
it
we
a thumb
see the
drive, run whatever's on it. Let's go.
And like you said, it'll auto run. And when we see the database eventually, when it's confirmed, it literally says like witness protection database. Like, why would you even call it that?
Right.
Wouldn't you call it something else, like WordPress database? Just use WP, get it, ha ha ha. But like something. But anyway,
you don't even have to give it an extension. Don't even put database. Just say like, I don't know, cutekitties.txt. Done.
That's what I was also hoping that we would see, that when we saw all those images open up on those flash drives, I'm like, okay, maybe the database is within one of the images and you have to like decrypt it. Like, okay, yeah. I've seen that. That's a thing.
Sure.
It's not a thing in this movie.
No.
Okay, so let's see. It's nap time. Okay, we did that. Okay, so Reed offers the kids cookies. They ask adult-like questions, and then they eat. Sugar high happens all at once. The song I Want Candy plays, and the kids go wild. Reed cannot control them. He yells quiet to no effect. One kid pees into a trash can. Another kid pours paint onto another. Let's assume those cookies were laced with cocaine, because sugar doesn't do that. Okay, so the kids are on cocaine. Reed comes to Hallstrom's class with a kid who peed on him. Hallstrom takes the kid away to the bathroom, I assume, or she kills her. I don't know. Hallstrom then gets the kid to calm down by clapping a bit. They then go into meditation time. Reed is very happy. He questions Hallstrom about Kevin. She calls the kids those little brats, although I'm pretty sure the kids could hear her since she's like 5 feet from them. She talks, you know what I'm talking about. She's talking shit about them, and they're like right there. Reed flirts with his daughter. I mean, his daughter-aged colleague. End of day one. 41 minutes and 45 seconds. Getting
a
bit.
We're only ending day one.
Yeah.
I guess so the days are shorter, huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Back to Reed's place where Bill is waiting. 42 minutes in, and Bill gets a name thanks to the captions. His name is Sanders. Did you know that his name was Sanders?
I did not, actually.
His name is Sanders. They're having beers. Reed is threatened by Zogu's goons, so he beats them both up. Actually, quite handily. Reed tries to get the kids to behave using an air horn. The principal doesn't like that. He is disciplined. Reed talks to Bill and wants an earpiece so he can help him. They fight because Reed doesn't want any help. And this is where the food shows up, so I stop paying attention. Bill helps Reed deal with... No, actually, no. This is when I ordered the food. Bill helps Reed deal with a new parenting / new ways to talk to children. What a load of shit. 51 minutes, 45 seconds.
Yeah.
There's Jonathan.
I love that I pop back in and all I hear is, what a load of shit.
Well, let me ask you this. We're going to go back to this point. So the scene where the tofu explodes in the microwave, causing the microwave door to open. In physics, Jonathan, when something explodes in the microwave, can it provide a concussive force large enough that it would pop open a microwave door, or would the energy be dispersed in the explosion itself?
I mean, if it were strong enough and the door were the weakest part of the of the object, then at that point, yeah, the door could. I mean, if it's going to be that strong, since there's a latch that actually latches when you close the door, I would expect the entire door would actually pop off. As opposed to just opening, right?
Okay.
Depends on the strength of the latch, though. Either way, if the door pops open from the from the inside, the door's broken.
So you're saying that? What about the tofu element? Can tofu provide an explosion?
Oh
so
no!
Large?
You were confused. You were confused, Diaz. You didn't read between the lines. You didn't. You totally didn't get this. I can't believe you didn't get this. That wasn't tofu. That was C4.
Well, C4 with the blasting cap, which I saw on Mythbusters, will work. C4 on its own doesn't do that. So this kid was an assassin, which she might have been. So I think this is the same kid that pees on the guy.
The microwave acted as the blasting cap. Look, you are just your eyes were closed clearly when you were watching this part.
I apologize. I'll go back to the note that said, "What a load of shit." Okay,
I don't remember the name of that little girl, but she was clearly up to something.
All right, so 51 minutes 45 seconds going to a second screen. Now my notes get a little bit less in-depth. Zogu visits some lady, claims he's FBI. She gets all racist and says, "You don't sound like FBI. An immigrant can't join the FBI? Fuck you, lady."
Well, then he says he's the International Division of FBI, which, by the way, is called the fucking CIA.
But he did say it's new, which I did like, because it was stupid. But he also should be able to be in the FBI because, you know, America.
Have you ever applied to be in the FBI, Ayaz?
No. I looked into it, though. Okay. And
yeah. I did, too.
So do you, like, do you have to be, I assume you could just be a citizen, right? Or do you have to be a naturally born citizen here?
Well, you need to be a citizen.
Yeah.
And in the South, it helps if you're of a particular complexion.
Well, he is of a complexion. He just has a heavy accent. Anyway, so let's assume that Jonathan is right again. Tofu's C4, and there's some kind of natural citizenship element to this.
I didn't claim that that was the. I like that Jonathan's right that you have to be a natural born citizen to be in the FBI. I never made that claim.
Let's assume, you know what? Let's assume that in this reality where the cop thinks, oh, sorry, a federal agent thinks the only way to get the information, because this is clearly not Earth, wherever the fuck this is happening, it is not the Earth we are on. So in this universe, it's totally, that's how I'm going to start taking this movie. This is on a parallel planet. Because that explains a lot of shit, including Bill Bellamy's his ineptness. I haven't gotten to his home yet. That's coming. Yeah. That's coming. Here we go.
Okay.
All right. Back to school. Reed finds a lot of flash drives. He's being followed by Buttercup, the therapy pig. Back to Zogu and the lady. He asks about Jason and finds out about Kevin, the brother. The lady explains Jason is the con man. Kevin is a genius. This must be their mom. Back to school. Reed gets caught in Hallstrom's office by Hallstrom. Reed asks Hallstrom out, and she says yes. He asks about the same night, about taking her out that same night, and she says she hasn't had plans outside the school in months. Welcome to Kindergarten Cop 2, where we will see full frontal nudity because Reed is scoring later. That's what my note says. Hal says he called dibs on Olivia Hallstrom. Reed explains, I'm taking her out tonight. The therapy pig seems to annoy my dog, which was, I thought, very interesting.
You know, I was feeling, and I'm sure that my video's gone at this point, but I can still hear you guys.
Okay, good.
I was feeling at this point that the therapy pig was one of those red herrings. That's where I got cut off before when my internet connection died. But I kept feeling that because they were paying so much attention to the therapy pig, I was thinking, well, maybe it's not the guinea pig. Maybe it's the pig that is actually the where the flash drive is hidden somehow. Because it wasn't funny. It wasn't cute. It was just kind of there. It was just taking up time. And I was like, well, why else would this scene be here unless the pig plays a more important role? I even thought, well, maybe the pig isn't important for the clue. Maybe the pig doesn't play a part in the clue. But maybe when the bad guys catch on to what's happening and they go to invade the school, the pig somehow foils them long enough for the good guys to get the upper hand. That doesn't fucking happen either.
That would have been good.
Yeah, and or if they confused the intel and they thought they lost the word guinea in guinea pig, and so they steal the pig instead of the guinea pig, that also would have worked. This is much better plot. Dolph, if you're watching, contact us. We want to talk about this.
The pig is a hero.
That's Kindergarten Cop 3 coming soon. Reed sees a dad being rough.
Some odd years.
Reed sees a dad being rough with his kid, Molly. Zogu sees Reed at the school. Back to the office. We find out that Molly's dad was he's drunk at the time. Bill wants to talk about the date, and Bill explains Reed can't sleep with her. That'd be Olivia. Zach already has Hallstrom at his shack by the water. So this would be the part where I think Jonathan wants to talk about Reed's home.
Well, just that it was a airline trailer next to a waterfront property. And I was like, this, I don't know, like, it's so weird to see him take a woman back to this place. And the first thing she says is, how can you afford this? And I'm like, he's squatting on the land. It's a fucking airline trailer.
They cost like a couple thousand dollars. So like, that's a lot of, anyway. So Hallstrom cleans up nicely. She says Zach's muscles scream one night stand. Yep. Reed plays an album on his turntable. Yes, really. Hallstrom is turning into putty. 1 hour and 2 minutes. Check the time. Still 37 minutes left? How? How the hell is that possible? Hallstrom laments that kids forget about their kindergarten teachers. Bullshit. I still remember Miss Conti. She was a nice lady. Two of Zogu's goons, the ones who Reed beat up, are watching Reed. Reed asks about if Kevin left anything with Olivia, and she's getting a bit weirded out. Reed then offers a Twix to Olivia. It's his one vice. She eats his bar. He says,
and everything is forgotten. It's no longer weird anymore. Like, that's what happens here. Like, yeah. So let me ask you detailed questions about this other person that you worked with. Why do you ask? Well, because I get better. It gets me closer to the kids. Well, why are you asking specific questions about whether he's left unmarked packages with me?
I'm sure you covered this while I was rebooting my modem. That fuck you, Comcast. But why in the world did he not take the two goons into custody after they assaulted him?
Oh, the first time. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because there's a bit where he's getting in his car. We just, you know, as you just mentioned, the two guys that he beat up were spying on him on his date. So when he was getting into his car and the two guys came up to try and threaten him and said that they would shoot him, and then he beats them both up, he just gets in his car and drives away. Why would he not arrest them, take them into custody? I mean, they are the two henchmen of the guy they're going after in the first place. They get more leverage that way. They could even, if they break them, they don't even need the wife anymore, who's the one person that is actually in danger at this point.
Yeah.
And they actually say they will shoot him. They tell the agent, we will shoot you if you don't give us this information. So it's not like they're just like, something's going to happen to you if you don't tell us. They literally say, we're going to shoot you. Yeah, like you said, parallel planet.
You got yourself a nice Airstream trailer here. It'd be a shame if someone melted it down for scrap.
So obviously, like we were saying,
the henchmen actually think he's a kindergarten teacher, and that's what's going on.
In the '90s, clearly. So this is like that Sliders episode that the Earth spins slower around the sun. So like they're still stuck in the '90s, sort of. And that's why this is
Sliders episode. I don't remember any Sliders episodes. I watched it, but I.
There's an episode where they kind of go back in time, but they bullshit their way around it. So I'm saying, so this movie obviously taking place on a parallel Earth, why all the comedy is based in the 90s, even though it's sort of modern hippy-dippy shit with students.
Yeah, there's an Uber joke in there.
There's an Uber joke. But that's why it's Kindergarten Cop. It should be like maybe T-O-O, not like Kindergarten Cop 2, like a sequel. This ain't no fucking sequel, okay? Because this...
Was it really an Uber joke at the end, or was it product placement?
Oh, it could have been both.
I think Twix was a product placement, by the way. Let's go back to this.
Uber would pay for that. I mean, do you really think they were just getting bidding wars between Uber and Lyft for like this movie?
I heard that Lyft was going to get the contract, but then Uber called them out to a remote location, canceled the call, and then they got it instead.
Right. Yeah.
So again. Dolph, we know you're watching this, Dolph. Let us know. So like I said, Reed offers a Twix to Olivia. It's his one vice. She eats his bar. He says, you want me to show you how I stay in shape? Nope. It's not sex. It's line dancing. Line dancing. He gets Olivia to ride a mechanical bull. And the video actually goes slow-mo for a bit. Down goes Olivia. She's broken her neck. Let me finish. This movie is taking a terrible twist. Okay, she didn't break her neck. I'm just amusing myself.
You skipped over how it was so clearly sexualized, the whole segment of her on the mechanical bull. Like, it was shot in an angle and in slow motion specifically to be a suggestive scene to say this woman is going to be a crazy, wild, awesome ride in the sack. That was the whole purpose of that sequence.
What was this movie rated? Was it PG or PG-13? Because it was, like that scene, like I'm watching it and I'm like, okay, so we have like three scenes by now. Because I watched this on a train, so, you know, it's a perfect movie. The problem is like I'm watching it and I'm like, we have one scene with like women jumping into a pool. I'm like, that's fine. And then we have like, you know, and then pretty much the only other scene we have is riding the bull. And I'm like, also not really horrible, but oddly sexual for this movie.
Okay,
because
you know
we haven't had this at all.
It was quite sexualized, the riding of the bull. I thought what they were going to do is they were going to give us like a twist. They'd be like, oh, well, Dolph's actually going to go do it, and it would be comical. It's like, no, they put the girl up there, and they did shoot it in slow-mo. Jonathan's totally right. The angles were shot that way. I just wanted to, like, I'm just sitting there like, okay, guess they're going with that. That's what they're doing.
I mean,
so then they get some.
It was also, I also felt, did you not feel that it was a little weird that the kindergarten teacher turns out to be like that ready to jump in to bed? I mean, not that that happens, but she's that ready for it to happen.
I have notes about that.
She has a line in the beginning of the day, which like kind of suggests that, I guess.
Yeah, I guess maybe she's just got very good at separating her work personality and her let's go have incredible recreational sex personality. I don't judge. I'm just saying that the character turn took me by surprise.
My question here is your let's go have recreational sex personality and work personality are not one in the same?
They are one in the same. That's what I'm saying is that there's no divide there. Right. What you see is what you get. When I'm live streaming myself eating hot sauce, you know it's me saying,
good to go.
Okay. On that note, let's continue this. Oh, I got to find my notes. Where am I? Oh, crap. It moved. Full frontal, 1 hour, Miss Conti. She was a nice lady.
Full frontal?
It was a note. Oh, you weren't there for that. I said at some point, I said, welcome to Kindergarten Cop 2, where we'll get full frontal nudity later because Reed is going to score. All right. Let me keep going here.
God.
All right. So Reed comes back with some beers. He finds out that Zogu is talking to Olivia. Reed is freaked out a little bit. He pulls Olivia out of the bar by pulling her arm. Reed explains that Zogu is the head of the Albanian crime syndicate. Olivia's turned on that Reed protected her. And now she's eye-fucking him with a lip bite, no less. Kindergarten Cop 2 with nudity coming soon. Reed asks to continue this later since he didn't want to sleep with her at that time. Back to the FBI. An hour and 10 minutes in, Sanders officially gets a name by the higher-up because they actually say it out loud. The higher-up has no name as of now. Now it's school. Hal is in the principal's office. He's saying that Reed needs to be fired because Hal found a taser in Reed's briefcase or something. The principal accidentally shoots the taser into Hal's nuts. Reed turns off the gun after dropping it. Hal admits he shits himself a little bit. Okay.
And that suffices for the big humor in that sequence.
Yeah, that
is the guy screaming, "You shot me in the nuts," and then the principal saying, "I shot him in the nuts." And then Dolph Lundgren's character casually turning off a taser, which, by the way, is not the way tasers work. Tasers fire for like 15 seconds and then stop. Although you can send a second shock through if you want to.
Can you stop it in the 15 seconds or not?
No, it's just going.
Good to know.
Yeah. Fun.
See,
thing
this show is educational. All right, so we got Sanders is spying on Zogu. Then he gets distracted by the women. Because she's there at the pool. Nature walk time. No, it's capture the flag time. Olivia has her class. Badass music plays for Reed's class. Olivia's got a naughty schoolgirl thing going right now. The friendly bet. Loser pays for dinner. Sophie's one of the kids. She has a fake flag, while some other kid really has the flag. Molly is crying by some kind of tree. Finding out more about Molly's drunk dad, Mr. Edwards. I guess I skipped the fact that the class wins. I mean,
they do.
Reed's class
wins. It's also
wins
strange that the weird hippie school is putting two kindergarten classes against each other playing capture the flag. That's
and also
outside of their bounds generally, but we'll go with it.
My notes have seemed to have skipped entirely that Reed teaches them about the Trojan War thing and the Trojan horse thing, and that's why he comes up with this plan.
Which, by the way, doesn't make sense.
It's not how they win.
Yeah, that's not how they win. They win by faking a flag, not by sneaking in a group under pretense that they are part of a gift or part of the other team, then stealing the flag and winning. It's a totally different. I mean, both were fake out plays, but that's where the resemblance ends. But yeah, he used the little toy. So Hal's little toy soldiers to explain the Trojan War to the kids who all thought it was fascinating.
All right, so we've got Molly's crying, finding out more about her drunk dad, Mr. Edwards. Edwards lost his job. Reed has a talk with Edwards and tries to set him right. Olivia's turned on by this. Bachelor auction. Rita's up, starts bidding at $100, ends at $2,000. It's Olivia fanning cash. Olivia is turned on by this. Another shot of Mija, the guinea pig, is the drive
Olivia's
in the cage.
Olivia is turned on by Mija.
That's not
the
title. Don't
so
jump
the title
the gun
is
yet.
Olivia's turned on by this. That's got to be the
by
title.
By Mija, the guinea pig. Is the drive in the cage. Here's the poem about guinea pigs again. Oh, God damn it. This thing keeps popping up. Here's the poem about the guinea pigs again. This has to be important. An hour and 20 minutes in. Can we get to it already? Agent Sanders gets tricked in a surveillance van. Somebody knocks and says, Agent Sanders. Then he opens the door and gets punched in the face by one of the Albanian gang members. The surveillance van is now stolen. Miss Sinclair is the principal. She gets a name. Reed explains the school needs to be locked down because they are in danger. Hal has the kids at his... Go ahead.
And the reason he knows that they're in danger is because... What's Bill Bellamy's character's name again?
Sanders.
Sanders is left alive. Like, they knock him out, right, and they steal his surveillance van, but they leave him alive and in possession of his phone.
Quick. Yeah, he wakes up pretty quick, too.
He recovers. Really, he still has his phone. He calls Reed to warn him, and he calls Uber. That's where the Uber joke comes in, where he gets a ride with Uber because he called in for backup, but Uber arrived there first. So that's
the
Uber joke slash endorsement or whatever. And I thought it was weird. Like, well, why? I mean, I understand this is a lighthearted comedy. You're not going to kill off the character this way, but logically, why would they leave him alive or unrestrained or let him keep his phone? Why would they let any of that happen?
Did we skip the fact that I think you mentioned it, but the kids are going on a field trip with their computer teacher, and the computer teacher looks at the kindergarten teacher and goes, "No, it's fine. I got this." Isn't that odd? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just a little odd.
So we got Hal has the kids at a sculpture garden because that's their field trip. He's carrying an odd canister. Sanders knows the name Mija. At this point, Sanders is at the actual kindergarten room. By the way, in this movie, in the surveillance van, Sanders has cracked all of the surveillance cameras in the school. There is a little pen on Dolph Lundgren that actually is a little camera. All the mics are being picked up. So you'd think that any conversations they would have would not be in the school, since the van is compromised, that has all of this information being sent to it. But that's just me. All right. So Sanders, he knows the name Mija. Olivia is in on it. I was starting to wonder at this point because she had that $2,000. Kevin called Jason that. Reed figures out the poem finally means something. The odd canister is a time capsule. It was an acrostic. So time capsule was the actual word. Although it seemed like they just arbitrarily took letters. But maybe I was wrong about that.
Yeah, when they were actually writing it out. Totally true.
Yeah.
Right, like the word is clearly the first word of the next line. Like, there are no lines here, really.
Well, I mean, there was a different kid that would say different pieces. So maybe...
Yeah, maybe it matched up to that.
It's one of the few things I didn't go back and watch, which would be actually all of it. What am I kidding? So the odd canister is a time capsule. Zogu shows up now at the school. He claps, and now Zogu takes the FBI's weapons. Zogu is headed to the sculpture gardens. Zogu orders to take the girl. Zogu says it's Reed's MO to get romantically involved on assignment. Olivia is turned on by this. Bill is to be killed. Bill is to be killed because they now finally order his death. The principal saves Sanders by beating the henchman up with a baseball bat.
This is when I thought the pig should have jumped in. The pig should have jumped in this scene, but didn't.
Okay. The Trojan horse method will surely play out in this movie. That's my next note to myself. The time capsule is handed over. There's a multi-tool, a blue plastic thing, and a flash drive. That's all, by the way, that's in the time capsule, as far as I can tell.
Not a great time
confirmed.
Capsule.
What's that?
Oh, just not a great time capsule.
You can't guarantee that a flash drive is something that's going to be easily accessible in the future. That could very well be a completely obsolete technology.
That's why
I think they were talking about
my time
200
capsules
years.
Get a golden record. That's the only way.
It was something like 200 years, too.
I always just put a person in mind, and the person will explain in 200 years what all the stuff means.
Assuming they don't explode because they're made out of C4. As we know, that's how people are made on this planet. Planet of Kindergarten Cop 2.
You just draw straws, and whichever kindergartner has the shortest straw gets shoved into the time capsule.
Sorry, Sophie. You're fucked. The time capsule is handed over. Like I said, there's a multi-tool, a blue plastic thing, and a flash drive. Confirmed, it is the database because they put it in a computer and a little netbook. And as we talked with Eric before, it all runs auto-run, and it shows up and says witness protection database. Because they didn't even bother to say, like, have a password before you get to the database. None of it. Anyway, adults walk over to the fish statue. Zogu makes a joke, how fitting, you'll sleep with the fishes. Reed is about to be shot. He stops Zogu and asks for a last meal. He pulls out a Twix out of his pocket. The third mention. The kids are in the fish with spears. They attack the bad guys. Reed does most of the damage. It's a good thing Zogu doesn't punch children.
Right?
Because he takes the feeding.
He's got a gun, and he's generally, I would assume, in a panic state. Mm-hmm. Turning around and just firing at something running at you, I would have expected that to actually happen.
I mean, look, and the other thing is, like, he doesn't have to, like, even kill one of them. He could just, like, kick one. I think the other kids might back the fuck up. He's a big dude.
Just, right?
just wing Trip and the rest will fall in line.
You make an example out of Trip and the rest will follow. Okay, so it's a good thing Zogu doesn't punch children. Hal beats the hell out of one of the henchmen, which is very surprising. Reed chases Zogu and he gets the drop on him. Fist fight in the water. Zogu is defeated relatively easily in hand-to-hand combat. Reed wins and says, class dismissed. Sanders shows up and mocks Reed for that quip and backup arrests Zogu. The parents show up and we find out Molly's drunk dad owns a suit, or he got a job, I guess. The higher up gets a name at 1 hour 33 minutes by the captions. His name is Boss. Boss tells Reed to get back to work. Back to school. Olivia's alone. Olivia's turned on by this. Reed looks at some artwork. Reed looks at some artwork by the children.
If I were Olivia and I were alone, I would also be turned on by that.
Reed looks at some artwork by the children. Olivia walks and sees Reed. She calls him Agent Reed. Olivia's turned on by this. She runs and kisses him. The principal shows up with the kids. She says, while they're kissing, that's strike three. So I guess Reed is fired. Okay, all the kids hug Reed and Olivia. The end. There are credits. Mija and Buttercup get credits with images, Mikey and Percy, respectively. Zogu? No. No credits for Zogu until the actual text. And so ends your experience of hearing how Kindergarten Cop 2 went.
You know, after hearing your rundown, I have identified the single most unbelievable element of this entire movie. Which is that a kindergarten school teacher would have $2,000 to waste on a charity auction.
No, totally true. When that happened, I was like, hold on. And I like Ayaz's point where he's like, she might be in on this because she had $2,000. Because I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, hold on. Where did she get this money?
And it was in cash. She's fanning it.
Yeah, all of these people had cash. Yeah.
Well, I could expect, you know, like the rich mothers and the rich whatever, but like, she's a kindergarten teacher, so she's apparently fiscally incredibly irresponsible, or she's really independently wealthy, and or she's in on this thing with Kevin, who maybe she killed in a car accident, like by cutting the brake lines. That's what I'm going to say is happening.
Yeah, let's cover some loose ties
for her to like bet or to show that she's into him by paying $2,000. Right? Because that's really all you're doing in this scenario.
Well, like, either that or you're saying not just that you're into him, but that you don't want any other bitches getting their claws into him.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah.
So let's talk about some loose ends in this movie. That like the fact that the bad guy's wife, who is important
mistress.
In
she
the
was
very
the mistress, by the way.
Mistress, sorry. The bad guy. So I was right when I said his hot thang as opposed to wife in my notes. The bad guy's mistress, who's very important, like she's the MacGuffin essentially of the entire film. We never really hear anything else about her except for the fact that, you know, the bad guy gives a sly dig at Reed about him getting romantically involved while on a case, and they specifically doing that to upset Olivia. But we don't see her again. She doesn't really factor into it again. We don't see what happens with the trial with the bad guy or anything like that. So that's a loose end. The fact, again, that they established the therapy pig, but there's nothing that happens with the therapy pig. I guess it's just supposed to be funny that they had a therapy pig.
What the hell happens with therapy pig? I will say, though, therapy pig was got the one laugh out of me. Because when they're in the office in the beginning, Dolph looks at the principal and he goes, therapy pig? And he's like, and the principal is like, yeah, she's really great with the kids. She's a good swine. For some reason, that got me. And I let out a laugh for that.
I was mostly feeling empathy for the poor pig who was clearly having trouble standing up on that floor. And whenever the pig was trying to move, its little hooves were like sliding all over the floor. And I'm like, this is not good for that pig.
Well, wait a second. Back to the loose ends. The loose ends, you said that. With the whole Katja story, the fact that what's his name? Zugo? Zogu?
Alexander.
Alexander, A to Z, whatever the hell his name is, that guy, he was in the act of, you know, attempted murder. So I don't think they need this witness anymore because they have the agent saying, he pulled a gun on us, he brought us by the fish, he said he was going to kill us. And we have kid witnesses. And as we know, kids can be interrogated, and clearly they're unbiased witnesses. So obviously Alexander's going to jail. So there's nothing to worry about there.
Right. But I'm just saying that even leading up to that point, that she was largely forgotten, that really the emphasis was on the database, but not on the mistress, which always seemed weird to me. Like, I understand from the FBI perspective that they want the database back because there's way more at stake here than just one case, right? If it's all the witnesses that are under FBI protection, that's a huge number of people, right? But from the bad guy's perspective, the one thing that he was caring about, at least at that point, was getting to the mistress and killing her off so that she couldn't testify against him in court. And yet, we don't hear anything about her for, like, the rest of the movie. She's a non-entity.
Oh, well, she clearly has a cocaine overdose at some point. Off screen.
At which point the rest of the movie, like, the bad guy doesn't need to go after the database anyway because the one person who's against him is dead. I mean, it would be great to get hold of the database because that would be a huge amount of leverage that you could use in your future criminal endeavors. But, you know, the prime reason to get it would have been gone if that were the case.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, my takeaways from the movie were, first of all, back everything up. Like, one thumb drive that you're going to put in a container, not a great idea. You know, use an offsite backup. Second thing, turn off auto run on your fucking computer. Like, what is going on here? That's just a horrible idea. Do you want to stick in a thumb drive and see like 2,000 images open on your computer? Come on.
Why hide a thumb drive in a time capsule anyway? And why rely upon a poem or a series of phrases spoken by children to be the key to figuring out that the time capsule is where you're going to hide. So why do either of those things?
As we learned, Jason, which one was the teacher? Kevin.
Kevin
was not the genius. Jason was the genius.
Kevin is the genius.
Kevin was the genius. Jason was the fuck up.
And he liked all puzzles and games like that. That's why he would have had some kind of mnemonic device, an acrostic. You know, but so here's the thing, though. Kevin's been a teacher for 3 years, right? Remember that? It's three years.
Something like that.
What other fucking scams do, like, the first and second graders know through some, like, bullshit poem? Like, I want to know more about the poems, he said, because who knows if this is his only heist? This is only one part of Kevin's life.
Was he involved in the heist? I thought he was just protecting his brother.
Well, the thing is he is the one who got the information, really. Jason claimed he did it, but Kevin had the information. He's the one who had to crack the database, I assume.
They said
128-bit encryption, and like, well, he cracked it.
Was Kevin doing that knowing that it was government property? Because, like, I never got – I never understood that. I didn't – I thought that Jason was the criminal and Kevin ended up covering for his brother but wasn't necessarily a criminal. But I couldn't really tell because they never really explored it, at least as far – I wasn't paying a lot of attention, so I may have missed this.
They're probably both piles of shit. Just the mom doesn't really know that the smart one was a pile of shit because he's the smart one. And actually,
and he was able
it.
To hide it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's clearly what's going on there.
Yeah. There was another loose end that I was thinking of that might have even. Oh, yeah. The loose end. Was his death purely an accident?
No.
Because, you know, was it just coincidence and an accident, or was it actually orchestrated? Presumably it was just an accident because we don't have enough information to say otherwise, unless this other crime boss that was mentioned casually was really a factor and orchestrated Kevin's death. But if that's the case, it's never explored.
Yeah. So any explanations I come up with, by the way, if you guys are listening to this, you're like, it sounds like he's being definitive about this. I'm just talking bullshit, by the way. So none of this, all the stuff Jonathan is saying, none of it is explained in the movie. And I think I was telling Eric earlier while you were disconnected. I believe that perhaps Popoff had something to do with the death of Kevin because they ended up selling the information to somebody else, or they were attempting to. But that's never clearly explained why Kevin Flaherty is dead. Olivia does mention, she's like, it's not a spy movie. He just died in a car accident. But like I was saying in my other theory, Olivia is involved with Kevin's death. Olivia's got some shit going because, again, $2,000 in cash.
I want to see something the companion movie to this, which would be a lot darker and nastier and more interesting.
It's called Olivia's Turned On by This.
Olivia's Turned On by This, yeah. It's straight to Blu-ray. The one other loose end I can think of is what universe do they live in where a country Western bar is not just that popular but is only populated by insanely hot people?
Seattle?
Because I can tell you, I don't see that
like
around here.
I've been there.
Well, apparently this bar, which they actually show the name of it. I forget what it was called, like Roosters or Boosters or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I guess we can go find that. And Dolph, you let us know where that happened. But then again, where did they find a place like that? Like I said, Seattle.
If I go to that place and there aren't a bunch of super hot ladies in Daisy Duke shorts dancing around and getting on the mechanical bull, I will be really disillusioned and sad that Hollywood is not reflecting true life.
I love that Kindergarten Cop 2 would be the thing that actually, and of all your optimism, for all of your moral value, the one thing that made you crack was Kindergarten Cop 2's representation of the clientele of a line dancing country western bar. I love this idea.
I suffered existential crises when I watched this movie. I mean, and like I said at the beginning, it's really not, it's not awful. It's just not great. It's not good. But it's not like it's offensively terrible. There's nothing like, you know, it's probably, I would argue, a little bit better than like a Talking Cat. Exclamation part point question mark exclamation point, but it just, I don't know, it's just one of those things where it feels so lame. That's okay, because I picked a real one fucking day at a time. I picked a real winner of a movie for next week. So
all right, let me write this down so this time I don't forget it. What is the next movie?
Eric knows because I revealed it last week. We are to watch Honey.
Oh, with Jessica Alba?
Yes, yep. It's on Netflix now.
You know, I know
to get
about
him
that.
To switch to Honey too, but both it's on Netflix.
It's relatively new on Netflix. I remember I was going to write a joke about it, saying like it's one of the best movies of our time. It's not. I haven't seen it. I'm excited. I've seen a lot of Jessica Alba movies: Idle Hands, Fantastic Four, Sin City. She's in all of those movies. I hear she acts in them. I haven't seen that part yet. I'm looking forward to this. This is a dance movie, isn't it?
I think so.
I think so.
The only reason I picked Honey is because Glitter wasn't available.
Glitter? Oh, wait. With Mariah Carey?
Yeah.
I think I watched that once. So because
we watched Crossroads on this show. So
I never finished that movie.
You never finished? Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah. You missed the ending, which was the amazing part of Crossroads.
Yes. Right, when we started to explain to you about the pregnant girl losing her baby and everything, you were like, what?
I thought you were just fucking with me. Like I said, like the girl broke her neck off the mechanical bull. That didn't happen. So, yeah, I forgot about it. Okay.
When we described Crossroads, we were 100% not shitting you.
Okay, so we've got Honey next, and that means that Eric has the next pick. After that, Eric, have you been spying anything that you've seen that you're like, this is what we're watching next?
I haven't. I think I added one the other day, but I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, I've gotten into the habit of just adding them to my queue when they pop up on like the new releases or whatever. Or I'll see one, I'm like, oh God, that looks like it's shit. I better add it now or I'm going to forget.
Yeah, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3.
I remember what I added. It was Hotbot, which looks horrible.
Wow.
Hot okay, bot. So that means I have to find another movie next time that starts with H-O. You got Honey and Hotbot. So
yeah,
I think weird science except horrible.
I think Hotbot is going to be in stark contrast with Christian Mingle the movie.
Yeah. And I also think Hotbot won't be a commute movie, will it?
Probably not a commute movie. Probably not.
You know what you need? One of those privacy filters. On your phone. That way off-angle people aren't seeing.
That's true.
There you go. He's like, what kind of smut is he watching? Let me just get right on angle. Oh, Hotbot. Okay. All right. I think on that note, we should look into the future. This episode has been a clusterfuck. I should have just held that off. Next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
Ayaz, Jesus, why did you choose Fleshlight, the movie, in 3D?
So it turns out, Honey, I don't know what happened with Netflix, but like during the middle of it, it just shows a shot of a little bear full of honey. It goes on like this for an hour.
I installed the privacy filter wrong, and it actually kind of started projecting the film onto the train, which was, it didn't go well.